And researchers have hailed an historic moment in their efforts to combat Alzheimer's after studies showed that a drug appears to slow the onset of the condition. BBC News.
And the news was read by Alan Smith. New comedy next with Miles Jupp. Miles turns his hand to a new BBC One game show. He guests on the new podcast Jumpers of My Life with Sean Walsh and invites Julia Davis for a major role in a major new movie. Whatever next.
Do you question the police tactics of John McClane in Die Hard? Wonder how Vera became a detective? If so, It's a Fair Cop is for you. Each week, my studio audience takes on a real-life crime scenario, starting with a workplace thief making money faster than a Shoreditch avocado grocer, or, for our northern listeners, faster than a burger van at Old Fair. Was it Damon, the boss in knitwear? Was it Eric, the colourblind security guard? Or was it Penry, the mild-mannered janitor? No, sorry, that's Hong Kong phooey. The new series of It's a Fair Cop with me, Alfie Moore, on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds, Monday nights, 6:30 comedy.
Back to this evening on Radio 4, and Miles Jupp stars as Miles Jupp in a new sketch show about the ups and downs of being Miles Jupp, alongside guests including Julia Davis, Sean Walsh and, of course, David Gower. Whatever next?
Hello, I'm Miles Jupp. Whatever next? During the next half hour, is it the beginning of the end for fridge magnets? Are chairs more trouble than they're worth? And Celia Imrie describes her nightmare day spent stuck on public transport dressed as a wolf. All this and more on the show that asks, whatever next? Yes, this is Whatever Next, one of those programmes you get on Radio 4, starts at one time, finishes at another, and in between, well, here we are. So let's kick off with football. Much like France, you either love it or loathe it. One thing you can't deny is that it's big money. These days, top footballers are earning upwards of £200 a week, sometimes much higher. But to quote the working title of Willie Carson's autobiography, it's a short career. One man, ready to unlace his boots, peel his socks off and lower his shorts... I've made it sound sexual, that's wrong. One man who's about to stop playing football is Chris Roofingtile, captain of my local Premier League team, Barking Antisocial. Chris has joined us today on the reliably wipe-clean Whatever Next sofa. Chris, hello.
Hello, Mars.
You're drawing the curtain on your playing career. Not literally, of course. There are no curtains in football.
No, there aren't. It's an outdoor sport.
Fascinating. What made you realise that now is the time to say goodbye?
Well, I noticed at the start of this season I was getting a bit slower and my body started sending me messages. You know.
What sort of messages?
Football is awful. Stop doing it.
Chris, what I wanted to talk to you about is retirement. It comes to most of us eventually. Some people think I should retire now, including one man who chained himself to the BBC front desk, stripped to the waist and had Miles Jupp should retire painted on his torso.
Right.
The left nipple was the dot on the eye of Miles.
Oh, sorry about that.
But you shouldn't hold yourself responsible, Chris. The point is, what are you going to do next?
Well, it's going to be hard to move on from football, Miles. I mean, there are very few jobs that require that same combination of extreme physical fitness and willful ignorance. But fortunately, Mr. Rostropovich, the owner of Barking, has offered me a job elsewhere in his empire. I'll be working for him as muscle.
And what does that involve?
Quite a bit of lurking, a lot of glowering. Every so often I'll need to take one of his business rivals on a journey and take care of him.
Right, take care of him.
Exactly.
Make sure he's got enough snacks?
No.
Extra pillow if he needs one?
No, I mean take care of him.
Oh. Oh, God, oh, I see. Take care of him.
That's right.
I thought when he said...
Yeah, I know.
You mean have sex with him?
Yes, dear. Yes, that's right.
Lovely. Well, Chris, thanks for joining us. And what a start to Whatever Next. Hosting this sort of thing has been a long-standing ambition of mine, going back, at least as far back as when my agent first suggested the idea last Tuesday. Oh, there she goes again. Clara!
Oh, shut it! No, shut it!
Hello? I was hoping to speak to Clara, my agent. Is this her phone?
Is it what, Clara? Was she a posh girl? Was she sort of thin, so angry looking? Not good at keeping her front door locked, it?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, this is her phone.
Well, can I speak to her?
Well, she's not around at the moment.
Do you know when she'll be back?
Yeah, not sure, mate. Last time I saw her was over my shoulder on a moped.
So while she's busy, you're handling her business?
Yeah. And a telly.
Well, always nice to meet someone new from the agency. Unless... Oh, did I see you at last year's Christmas party?
No, not Christmas, mate. I was finishing a stretch.
Oh, right. Well, sounds very much like Clara. She takes her Pilates extremely seriously.
I've seen you here before. If I see you again, I'm going to catch you.
Oh, are you possibly Giles' son? He said he might bring him into the agency once he left the Royal Opera House.
No, I'm not Giles' son, mate, no. My dad's Mad Dog.
Mad... Was that a Welsh name? Anyway, look, it doesn't matter. I've been tipped off about this. I'm sure you'll be handling it. I have been pencilled for a Midsummer Murder.
Murder? Oh, that's a big job, that is.
Well, I'm sure you can handle it.
Who's getting rubbed out?
I think they said it was Brian Connolly.
Connolly, blimey.
He was pencilled for it first, then they rubbed him out, now I'm in the frame.
Right, you want me to deal with him before I deal with you?
Yes, I mean, that is how agenting works. They've sent me the script. Basically, a steam fair comes to town, I play a Hammond organist who fires poison darts out of his pipes.
Well, no, less I know, the better, mate. I can't tell the feds.
Yeah, I don't know all the agenting jargon, I'm afraid. I just,
right. Murder, that's a big job, yeah? It's going to want big money.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
250 quid.
Oh, right, is that not a bit pessimistic? I was thinking for something in the low five figures. I mean, £250, it's not much, isn't it, after you've taken your
10%? What, 10%?
Well, yeah, you get 10% of the whole deal. That's how it works.
What, so what? I'll get 10% of five figures?
What?
Yeah, right, so, mate, do you mind if I break into a run while I'm talking?
No. No, right. I love your sense of urgency. I mean, yeah. Clara's not been so proactive since the fire at her stables.
Yeah, right, who do I need to talk to?
Just someone at ITV, give them a call.
Right, well, mate, I'll be on their doorstep, I'll be up their arse.
Yeah, no need for that. Well, I mean, unless that is something you're into, in which case, you know, great. I'm all for it, by all means. More.
Right, I'm calling you back, yeah? You're going to get another call from
Lovely.
Me,
Lovely. Yeah? Pleasure to make your acquaintance.
No names.
Well, listeners, I don't know whether you have any plans for the weekend. Maybe inviting some friends over for a dinner eaten off of each other's bodies, or perhaps just popping to a garden centre with your loved ones for a couple of flower pots and a row. Either way, do keep an eye on BBC One, not just because it can't be trusted to behave without your supervision, but also to catch my new family quiz show. Very clever format, they've already tried it in America, and it has been a huge hit. You know, I'm not one to blow my own driving instructor, but I think it could be the future of television. I'm Miles Jupp, and welcome to Eat Some Sand, the show that gives you, the general public, the chance to win some money and eat some sand. I'd like to say a big hello to the 14 people in our studio audience. Quiet, please. And I'm going to say an absolutely whopping hello to tonight's contestants, Dave and Maeve. Dave and Maeve, hello.
Hello.
Which is which?
Don't matter.
So, tell me, where did you two meet?
Well, it's quite a funny story.
Oh, strap in.
I went on a dating app. And Dave went on a dating app. And the rest is history.
I mean, how lovely. Now, here's a question we ask of all our contestants. Take your time if you need to. Have you ever eaten sand before?
No.
Well, there's only one more person I need to introduce without whom we wouldn't be eating any sand at all. So let's say a hello so large you can see it from space to my good friend and yours, Alan from Travis Perkins. Hello, Alan! Left! Left! Steer for the cones, Alan!
How do you want the sand?
Just in the usual heap.
Right.
Now, Dave and Maeve, if you'd like to tuck in your napkins, it is a rollover this week, which means you'll be needing to eat twice as much sand as last week's contestants. Best of luck, and do watch out for any little flags on cocktail sticks. 3, 2, 1, go! Well, while they're working through their first course, here's some live music from the Ting Tings.
Hello?
Yeah, can I help you?
Is this the buffet lunch?
No. This is my dressing room.
No, I think this is the buffet lunch. There's all these tables with food on, so...
Oh, right. Oh, I thought that was for me.
No, I think it's for the whole cast and crew.
Bit late now. Whole salmon really slips down, doesn't it? Anyway, do you work here?
I'm Julia Davis.
Makeup or...?
I'm an actor.
Good luck, love. It is a tough business. So, what, are you in this show as well? Sorry, you said...
Julia Davis.
Yeah. Without an E, as in the snooker player Steve, or with an E, as in the perfectly fine in his own way, but not for everyone, former Radio 1 disc jockey Gary?
Without an E.
Are you related to Steve Davis?
No.
Oh, large world, isn't it? I would say pull up a chair, but I've smashed them all.
Yes, I can see that. Why Would you do that?
Oh, well, like the food, I assume they were just for me to use as I saw fit. What part are you playing?
Queen Victoria.
Ah, well, I suppose that settles it.
What do you mean, settles it?
You're the one I want to swap with.
You want to play Queen Victoria?
Well, I think it'd be a great fit for me. It's what I've been looking for. You often find yourself playing the same sort of parts, and, you know, this would be a real stretch.
The thing is, Miles, I think the people making the show, Queen Victoria, are probably going to be expecting me to play Queen Victoria. How are they going to react when you come out as Queen Victoria?
Were I a betting man, I would put the whole house on them being surprised and delighted.
And what part would I be playing?
Oh, well, you'd be playing my part.
Which is?
Trouser salesman. All you have to do, Mrs. Steve Davis, is hold up a pair of tweed strides and say, "Would these suit Albert, Your Majesty?" At which point the action cuts abruptly to the Crimean War.
I mean, it is all the most dreadful garbage, really. I don't know who wrote it.
I wrote it.
Oh, working two jobs. Crikey. Is that a deal?
I'm not sure it's going to work. It's a dark comic look at the life of Queen Victoria, interrogating her as a gradually disintegrating personality, struggling in the face of mortality, grief, and an overwhelmingly male society's attempts to define her on its own terms.
Well, that's all good. I'll do a voice.
And I'll be the trouser salesman.
Yeah, do you know the lines?
I wrote the lines.
Well, let's hear it then.
Trousers, lovely trousers. Who will buy my lovely trousers? Trousers, lovely trousers. Who will buy my lovely trousers?
Lovely woman, genuinely. Nice to help someone on the way up, too. Now, just time for a quick look ahead to tonight's Radio 4 Extra schedule. There's another chance to enjoy the classic 1980s sitcom Lisa's Place. Everyone's favourite, Brenda Walligan, plays Lisa, the lovable yet absent-minded, yet impatient, yet hateful, yet easygoing, yet hard-drinking, yet fascistic manager of an interior design boutique involved in an on-off relationship slash sex thing with war-wounded drinking fountain repairman and professional piglet wiener Bill Cottam. Next on the schedule is one of the all-time great panel games, that much-loved family favourite, Did I Say That Out Loud?, in which two teams of families compete to make a series of genuinely appalling remarks on a range of topics suggested by the studio audience. In the chair, as usual, is a professionally embalmed Ludovic Kennedy. If neither of those appeal, you might like to try my recent appearance on the podcast Jumpers of My Life, presented by comedian Sean Walsh.
Jumpers of My Life.
So, tell me about this one.
Well, as you can see, this one is it's a simple navy blue V-neck. But as with so many of these jumpers, there is a story attached.
Love it.
This is, in fact, the jumper I was wearing on 9/11.
Wow. Yeah, it was one of those days that kind of changes everything, wasn't it? You were thinking, I know what life was like this morning, but when I go to bed tonight, everything's going to be kind of totally different, wasn't it?
Well, it was a lot draftier by evening, I can tell you that. So I was very glad of the jumper. But yeah, your general wider geopolitical point stands.
Next jumper, another navy blue V-neck.
Yes, this is what I was wearing when I first saw the film Avatar.
3D.
Absolutely terrifying. Felt like the lizard things were coming right out at you. But fortunately, I was able to keep stroking my jumper for reassurance.
Yeah. I can see the fronts all sort of worn smooth. You've chosen this as one of the most significant moments of your life.
Yeah, I think for older people, you always remember where you were when Kennedy was assassinated or when John Lennon got shot. For my generation, you always remember where you were when you saw Avatar. For most of us, that would have been in a cinema. I can't speak for everybody, obviously.
OK. We're just going to take a quick break. Here's something from our podcast sponsor.
At Prednick's Abattoir and Arms Sales, we put the customer first, not the horses. Our machine guns get through 200 horses an hour. And the guns we don't use to kill horses, we sell to Saudi Arabia.
Shrednick's Abattoir and Arms Sales, proud sponsors of comedy podcasts.
Thanks, guys. Getting lots of good messages from you nutters in the Knitted Nitwits Club. Tony125 says, tank tops will never die. Miss _ Butcher says, it's all about ribbing. And Don Quixote Kong says, Keir Starmer is not the choice of the members. Miles Jupp is with us. Miles, what's your next jumper?
OK, this one is it's a navy blue V-neck.
Oh, something of a theme developing, I think.
Well, I can't pull the wool over your eyes.
Brilliant. And if you like that, listeners, do tweet it. This jumper, quite a few holes, and the edges are sort of charred, I see.
Yes, this is the one that I wore during the London riots.
Of course.
So much of the fire damage occurred when I was wearing it around my head and leading the charge on a branch of Games Workshop. A lot of anger that night, but also a lot of Warhammer collections completed.
I'm glad the jumper's in one piece.
Well, I can't deny it's alarming when you've got a burning jumper on your head. You know, a lot of things race through your mind. Mainly, what can I use to put this thing out? The answer to that question, as to so many in my life, was a water cannon.
Jumpers of my life.
Right, where are we? And is there any way of stopping it? Just time for the latest bother forecast. And it looks like we can expect plenty of bother persisting across the rest of the evening with occasional outbreaks of aggro. But later tonight, that'll just fade to churlishness. Tomorrow morning sees waves of apathy coming across from France, which one has to say is the usual direction, and those living in the southwest can expect to be showered with other people's awful opinions. Across the Midlands, there'll be unexpected episodes of regret, followed in places by an unexplained desire to vomit. A gale warning for East Anglia. Women called Gale are not to be trusted. Do not let them into your bed or mortgage arrangements. And listeners in Northern Ireland, just keep talking, someone will come and find you. Looking ahead to the weekend, for those of us who can bear to, expect widespread, underwhelming numbness, similar to the feeling you get while watching an independent British film. There's a high chance of gloom, paranoia, momentary horniness, and a greater than usual risk of finding yourself walking around a multi-storey car park at 4 a.m. in your slippers, going through every choice you've ever made, and not feeling satisfied with any of them. And aren't we all so terribly alone? And isn't this just a tiny glimmer of light before an eternity of darkness? And why doesn't everyone else feel that way? Because surely if they did, they wouldn't spend so much time reading the London Review of Books, and all these thoughts keep coming, and at the same time you can't stop humming Photograph by Ringo Starr, and it feels like the tears are rolling down your face in time to the thuds of the bass drum. Every time I see your face, it reminds me of the places that we used to go. And as for Scotland, changeable. Plenty more to come in tonight's programme, which means plenty for me to discuss with my therapist next Tuesday for the usual hourly fee. Hello, Martha. Sorry I'm late. There's a rather nice underpass at the end of your street. I was just testing the echo.
Oh, what were you saying?
Oh, the usual sort of thing.
Rotten hell, you bastard! I wouldn't want to be on your panel show anyway!
Anywho.
Well, come in. Oh, that's quite a hat.
Is it a bit much, do you think?
It's really not my place to say. Do you just want to hang it up?
Yeah, just...
Oh, can I give you a hand?
Oh, yeah, if you can just...
Goodness, that is heavy. Maybe we should just leave it there for now. Is that cast iron?
I'd have to check the label.
Oh, goodness, it's left stuff all over my... What is that, soot?
It smells like it, doesn't it? In fairness, the man in the shop didn't actually say that it was a hat.
No?
But he did say that it would keep me warm. To be honest, that's all I asked about.
I think it's a fire pit.
Yes, he did say it was a fire pit. I just assumed that was a type of hat, you know, like Panama or pork pie. You know, words that have a different meaning in another context but are also types of hat.
Why don't you just tell me how you are this week?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. I'm feeling a bit down, actually. I'm doing a campaign for this sort of dairy allergy awareness month. Actually, they're not calling it that.
What are they calling it?
I don't want to say.
Well, this is a non-judgmental space, Miles.
Lactose intolerant April.
Oh, dear.
Well, exactly.
So it's in April.
It's in May. And I've agreed to be the... I suppose the face of it. I had to do some radio interviews about dairy intolerance and something called a takeover of the Lactose intolerant April Instagram account.
Can you explain to me what that is?
Not without feeling even more wretched than I do already. To be honest, the whole thing has been a bit of a disaster.
You've convinced yourself it's a disaster?
Well, it's not so much me. It's all of the emails I keep getting from the organisers saying this has been a disaster, often in the subject line.
How has this made you feel?
One of the things I've been meant to do all month is avoid dairy. But in fact, if anything, it has just made me crave it all the more. Last night my wife came home with a huge block of cheddar, enormous. You know, one of those like you'd get from a catering wholesaler. Mm. I mean, goodness knows how she got her hands on the thing. I did wonder if it was in a tombola, because it had a cloakroom ticket sellotaped to it, but it wasn't one that ended in a zero or a five, so the plot thickens. Anyway, she put it on a high shelf before she went to bed, and I ended up just staring at it for 3 hours.
And what happened after that?
I ate it. Wasn't bad, actually. My mouth got a bit dry about two-thirds of the way through, but I had a couple of pints of Ribena and made it to the finish line.
I think we should probably do some kind of grounding exercise, Miles. So if you just want to stand up
okay,
and just feel the carpet under your feet and then just rotate your head gently. How's that?
Quite stiff.
Yes, your head's very tense.
Do you think it's the effect of lactose intolerable?
It's more likely to be the hat, I reckon.
Oh, you're the expert. Well, that was a bit of fun. Just time now for what is sure to become our impressively regular celebrity spotting feature, where we, that is we, invite you, that is you, to send in details of celebrities that you have spotted. So, one here from Karen in Bishop Auckland, quite my favourite kind of Auckland, who spotted the golfer Ian Woosnam buying screws and rule plugs in her local Wilco. She says the screws and rule plugs didn't match, but tells us, "I didn't say anything to Woosie. Let him dig his own grave." Here's one from Darren in the Vatican, who spotted the novelist A.S. Byatt in a branch of Sainsbury's home base, bellowing at an assistant in the paint department, "Bring me any colour you like as long as it's black." Classic Byatt. And lastly, from David, existing in the liminal space between being and having, who spotted all-round song and dance superstar Bonnie Langford burying a body on Hackney Marshes just before dawn last Thursday. I think I can guess whose body that was, and I can't say that they didn't deserve it. More of those next week, and as ever with celebrity spotting, we do encourage you to look with your eyes rather than your fingers. Now, one of the things we radio presenters like to do is enjoy a matey handover with the host of the next on-air programme, dispelling the idea that we're all a bunch of egocentric grifters who would claw each other's eyes out for a spot on Celebrity Antics Road Trip. And if I peer through the glass into the next studio, I can see the cast of The Archers setting up for tonight's show. There they all are, all those much-loved characters. Mr. Archer, Mrs. Archer. The list goes on. Oh, they've got a baby pig. Baby pig in the studio. Something of a clue as to what might be unfolding this evening. I wonder if perhaps they're going to give it a bath. Did that at my daughter's primary school. Well, we all had to fill in a lot of forms. Oh, scuttling about in there. Hope he doesn't make a mess under the desk. Can always blame that sort of thing on Sir Melvin Bragg. Should probably try and speak to them. Hello there, archers. What have you got planned for us this evening? No answer. Such professionals, far too focused. Looks like there's plenty going on. Few people daubing what appear to be runes on the wall. One imagines for good luck. One of the younger men has come up to the glass and he's staring at me, rubbing his finger backwards and forwards across his throat. An old actor's signal that means, please don't interrupt, we are very much in the zone. Now they're spreading some plastic sheeting over the floor. I'm guessing that's for sound effects reason, but it does all look very similar to the garage in the 1990 film Goodfellas. Ooh, one of the older ladies, can we still say that, has caught hold of the piglet. What's happening now? Oh, goodness. Well, I can tell you that plastic sheeting, not for sound effects reasons, as I wrongly suggested earlier. Wow. It's hard to describe what I'm looking at now. A quite remarkable display of speed butchery. Not an incision wasted. And, yeah, it does now look like the whole cast are participating in a black mass, the worship of Satan seemingly top of the agenda. And as the hooded celebrant drops porcine entrails into a flaming chalice, everything's pointing towards a turbulent evening in Ambridge. Just time now for a sneak preview of this week's Archive on 4, where I'll be taking a look through the archives on 4 to discover the secret history of cricket through archive footage on radio4.co.uk. For cricketers, there's nothing tougher than going on an international tour, other than appearing on A Question of Sport and pretending to look interested in what's going on around you. But why are these tours so tough? The months away from home, the hostile crowds, and the fact that for decades, in addition to those gruelling test matches, touring England teams were expected to perform a full programme of musical theatre. We fight together, oh, we
band of brothers. What people often don't realise is that musicals and international cricket were yoked together from the start. In fact, international cricket only exists at all because it was invented back in the 1880s by Gilbert and Sullivan as a sort of marketing strategy.
BBC cricket commentator Simon Mann. By the 1980s, the pattern was firmly set. Each overseas tour would involve a series of first-class and one-day games and a full-cast proscenium arch production, complete with orchestra. Selection for a test series could be more of an art than a science. Sometimes players would be picked whose performance was hamstrung by being only good at cricket. Graham Fowler top scored in India back in 1983, but his inexplicable casting as Sally Bowles in Cabaret set his career back years.
I hated doing Phantom. I had to run with the chandelier, which I always thought got more applause than I did at the curtain call.
David Gower, former England captain, inspirational batsman, countertenor.
I used to get accused of not practising enough. I have to say I was often exhausted. 85, 86 in the West Indies, I was captaining the side and leading the company in Me and My Girl as Bill Snibson. Some days it was as much as I could do to pick up a bat. Or a bouquet at the end of Act Two. It's no wonder they beat us 5-0.
Statistician and People's News Quiz host Andy Zaltzman.
David may feel that he was exhausted, but if you look at the statistics, he actually batted better after a full night playing Sweeney Todd than he did after a night's rest.
The musicals would seldom spill onto the field, with a few embarrassing exceptions.
Oh, there's a nasty collision there. Geoffrey Boycott's on the floor. He's getting to his feet. The umpire's asking him if he knows where he is. And yes, yes, he's telling him he just met a girl named Maria.
As the 1980s wore on, and there's no denying they did, the worlds of cricket and musical theatre became increasingly indistinguishable. Michael Ball.
When you tell people you work in musical theatre, people make certain assumptions about you. And one of those assumptions, especially if you're a guy, is that you will be some kind of international cricketer. And that isn't true at all in my case. Well, I played one test at the Gabba in 86, but apart from that.
One man above all others dominated English cricket and musicals in the 1980s, Tim Rice. And second to him, Ian Botham.
Beefy took a while to adapt to musicals. He was into his pantos, but we had to keep telling him pantos aren't musicals. That was a conversation that could get quite heated in the dressing room. But in the end, he came out of his shell and gave the most stunning performance as Evita, followed, I have to say, by a quietly heartbreaking Peter Grimes.
The new central contracts for cricket introduced in the early 2000s would expressly prohibit musical theatre of any kind. All we're left with are memories and treasured mementos, programmes, original cast recordings. And in the museum at Lord's, in a climate-controlled cabinet past which thousands of tourists troop each year, the Technicolor Dreamcoat of Freddie Flintoff.
How long till you see that we belong?
And the merest glance at Time's wrinkled flapjack tells me that we've come to the end of the show. Just time for a quick look forward to next week's complaints. And we'll be expecting a very full postbag next week after we transmit what the Sunday Times radio reviewer will describe as possibly the most revolting 28 minutes I have ever experienced. 3 stars. Olympic legend Christopher Dean will make an emotional appearance on the Lorraine Show for the day after transmission to describe the programme as the most degrading experience of his life, brackets professional career only, while Jane Torville will simply tweet, great radio. And a 24-stone man called Chris, with several previous convictions, will scale the Eric Gill statue outside Broadcasting House to chisel into its chest the words, I did not enjoy that very much. Bring back quote-unquote. Whatever Next was hosted by me, Miles Jupp, and to a greater or lesser extent, featured the additional voices of Julia Davis, Justin Edwards, Philip Fox, David Gower, Simon Mann, Dominic Moore, Vicky Pepperdine, Diana Speed, Sean Walsh and Andy Zaltzman. It was written from start to finish by James Kettle and myself, and script edited from soup to nuts by Graham Garden. It was at times produced by Victoria Lloyd and could only have been a random production for BBC Radio 4.
Wonderful stuff, Miles. Another visit to Whatever Next, next week. Now, before the news at 7 o'clock, a very special edition of our regular discussion programme, Those Who Fail to Learn the Lessons of History Are Doomed to Repeat Them. So, let's learn them. OK.
Hello, I'm Miles Jupp, and welcome to another edition of Those Who Fail to Learn the Lessons of History Are Doomed to Repeat Them, So Let's Learn Them, OK? As ever, myself and the panel will take a seminal event from history and consider what lessons can be drawn from it for the modern day. On my left, columnist and author of the book The Lies That Women Tell, Martin Bogart. On my right, the former chief executive of the National Society for the Protection of Well-Connected Children, Alison Baverstock. Behind me, the poet, critic and